Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
I get to chat to Zakira Vadi now. She's the coordinator for the Strengthening Democracy Program at the Ahmed Kathrada Foundation. Zakira, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Zakira, I believe that your organization paid a visit to some graves of some icons that took part in the march in 1956. Before we get to the actual visit, I want to know, for our listeners' sake, and we've been chatting about this during the show for the past hour, about how important it is to celebrate Women's Day, but a lot of people have forgotten the importance of that march 65 years ago. Remind our listeners why that was a critical moment in our country's history.
Well, I think it was critical in several respects. The first is internally within the liberation movement. Yesterday, Auntie Sophie Williams, the Brain, was speaking and said that men were often recognized as struggle icons or struggle freedom fighters, and women didn't necessarily share the same recognition. So I think internally within struggle politics itself, it showed that women could organize themselves, that they were politically active, and that they could do something to shift things fundamentally. Secondly, I think it was a strong show of force against the apartheid government at that time. To mobilize 20,000 people into the streets is no easy feat. I know with Strengthening Democracy Program, sometimes we have to organize pickets, etc. It's difficult to organize people, transportation, logistics, safety of people while they are marching. So it showed the organizational capacity of women in the country. And thirdly, I think it was important because it saw a cross-section of women from different sectors of society. So it crossed racial barriers at the time, something which was extremely significant because we were living in a highly segregated society, and to have women of different races leading the march and participating in the march was extremely important. It shifted across class barriers, religious barriers, age barriers as well. We had very young people, and Auntie Sophie at that time could not have been over about 20 or so, and others who were much elder who were part of the struggle as well. So it crossed all forms of barriers, and that was something that the apartheid government would obviously have not been very happy with it, because the nature of apartheid was around segregation. And then it made a march around the pass issue. This had been an issue that had been brewing for a long while, and I think it was a significant show of force for women and certainly one of the landmark moments in our history.
So Auntie Sophie is the last survivor of that march 65 years ago. How impactful was it to hear directly from the mouth of somebody that took up the banner all those years ago, and at the same time to visit the graves of these icons? Because everybody waxes lyrical about Women's Day and how important it is, but nobody actually takes the time to listen to the survivor, the last remaining survivor, and to even visit these graves.
Definitely. I think she's not the last surviving member of the march, because there were 20,000 women. Yesterday, we just heard from someone in the Eastern Cape that there was another one of the other leaders of the march that is alive in her 90s at this point in time. So I think there's a lot of digging up that we still need to do in terms of getting the historical data that may still be available, and people who may still be alive to get their stories. But in terms of hearing from Auntie Sophie herself, it's absolutely phenomenal. You know, when you speak to people like Auntie Sophie and previously at the foundation during the life of Ahmed Kathrada, it's as if you're speaking to a history textbook that's a living person in front of you, someone who can share not just the facts and figures of the march, but the actual experiences of it. How did it feel like on the day? Several years ago, we interviewed Auntie Sophie about her life, and it was just extraordinary hearing her story of how she became active in the struggle, the process that she had followed. Many of the women who were active back in the day would have come through from very poor families and would have been politicized in the factories that they worked at, through the unions that were there, and once becoming active in union politics, then becoming involved in the broader struggle itself. So those stories are invaluable, and I think we, in a race against time, with many of the survivors, not only of this march, but other historical events as well, to document the stories and to ensure that that history lives on.
Well, I'm so glad to hear that Auntie Sophie isn't the remaining survivor, as was reported in some of the media, because those stories are so critically important. And I hope that somebody will reach out to the lady in the Eastern Cape who was at that march, and anybody else who was at that march, who would clearly be late 80s, early 90s, would make contact so that their stories can be recorded and remembered for future generations. But I need to ask you this, Zakira. we're talking about a march 65 years ago that was about equality, not just in terms of race, but in terms of gender. And we're living through a period in our country's history where GBV and femicide is at an all-time high. Why do we see this in a country with such a liberal constitution, with so much representation across the board? Why have we still got this immense problem, and what can we do as individuals to try address this?
Just this morning, we were having a discussion with the Tuli Marantela Foundation on the very same issue, and Advocate Marantela was saying that we have one of the best constitutions in the world, but when things are on paper and they are not necessarily implemented, that document is not a living document, it becomes a useless document. It doesn't mean that the constitution is necessarily useless, it means that it has to be implemented for us to see some of the change that we need in society activated and the actual transformation take place. So when it comes to gender-based violence issues, I mean, all social issues, if you take racism, for example, it's not something that's going to change simply because it's put down on paper. There are fundamental issues that need to change in society, both systematically as well as personally. So individually, in families, in communities, we still see very narrow-minded patriarchy. You still see, for example, I know up until recently, girl children taken out of school at a certain age, girl children not allowed to go to university, etc. Those are things that need to be challenged on an ongoing basis. It's not something that changes overnight. When it comes to gender-based violence and a range of other issues, I don't think I'm an expert on it, but certainly they must be understood in the context of all other societal issues. So if you look at alcoholism in South Africa and how alcoholism, together with intense poverty, poor social conditions, play a role in societal tensions, in family tensions, in community tensions, and how this then plays out against women in society, I think that needs to be understood in context. So it's both the social issues, I think also the historical issues, economic issues certainly play a role. We know women are generally have less access to the economy than men. So those are issues that are going to take a long while to change. But you ask, how do we change this? I think in terms of policy, there are things that can be improved. But again, I'm no expert on that. What those who are active in the space need to be questioning is, what is government doing in this space? We've seen marches take place against gender-based violence. Is government putting enough, for example, into police stations to deal with threat cases, to deal with domestic abuse cases? Is there enough resources for organizations who are doing awareness work in the space? Are they state funded, or are they really struggling to get funding? And I think the last thing, that within our communities, it's really the responsibility of all people to challenge patriarchy on an ongoing basis. In our homes, in our communities, our religious centers, different institutions in society, including within civil society, within the NGO spaces that we work in. It's something that needs to be challenged on an ongoing basis. And, you know, it's not something that that requires big things at a time. Sometimes, for example, in my family, if there's a gathering that takes place where there's predominantly men and, you know, there's a very important discussion taking place in the community, sometimes you feel, oh, should I go there as a woman? You know, there's so many men that are sitting there. The community men, for example, are not going to take it very well if a woman goes into that space. But you need to go into that space. You need to challenge and assert that your community is as important to you as it is to the men in your community. And those are small things that make a big difference in the long run.
That's very true. Zakira, thank you so much for chatting to us today about the March of 1956 and the personal impact of Auntie Sophie yesterday and the visit to those graves. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for that. And lastly, if there is anyone that has information on the 1956 march and people who may have participated, please get in touch with the Kathrada Foundation. You'll find the details on our website, because we will be collecting some of the details of the participants.
Thank you so much for that. That was Akira Vadi. She's the coordinator for the Strengthening Democracy Program at the Ahmed Kathrada Foundation.